Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yaremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebrov.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
Hello, one and all. We have made it to the end of yet another season, the second one that's been completed during continued full-scale war. UPL, the Cup, Persha and Druha have all concluded. Champions have been confirmed, European spots secured, promotion and relegation sealed for some. The Euros are right around the corner too. So where better to review the campaign that's just gone by than on Ukraine Plus Football? And where better to kick off the show tonight than quickly, because let's be honest, who's not surprised by the outcome? Look at the winners and runners-up from this year's campaign. Andrew, it was expected, wasn't it?
Yeah, the last episode we all chatted about how the Clásico was going to seal the league and then the Cup was coming shortly after. Shakhtar won both. All in all, they got their 15th league title and their 14th Ukrainian Cup, which means, based solely on trophies won since independence, Shakhtar and Dinamo are now level. And it'll be interesting to see who will go in the ascendancy next season, I think. Dinamo, I guess, ultimately deserved runners-up. They were probably the second most consistent and had the best quality in the team. And Shakhtar, of course, we've spoken about them all season. They've been pretty decent and overall a lot better than Dinamo in that championship-winning game and in the cup final too. Even these final weeks, both sides have rested their national team players that have been called up for Ukraine. Hence why a couple of the results are less than optimal for Shakhtar, but Dinamo have still ended up winning all of them. So, you know,
my opinion, most consistent team of the season definitely has to be Krivbas. Only side in Europe not to change a manager this season. Real testament to the strength of character in that team. We're going to jump on to the final day European places in a second. But Krivbas, they seem to have it comfortable. Ray, do you see them pushing on next season, or do you see them sort of potentially slipping back into the pack?
Yeah, right. That's what I've been thinking about when I look at the mid-table, because I think the leagues can be judged by mid-table teams, just like teams can be judged by midfield. So for me, the champion of the season is Cherkasy, LNZ, because they are unreachable for the rest and they cannot climb higher than they are now at seventh place. And they sort of hit the Kolos soft spot from before, because we used to know that Kolos is the one that is always in the middle, and they also qualified Europa League back then, one time. And that was an impressive achievement because they just promoted. And same here, Cherkasy just promoted and they finished right below Polisa, the winners, the actual winners of Premier League last season. And if we look at it, only Obolon is the one in trouble now in relegations playoff. And talking about Krivbas, yes, looking at these potential that Cherkasy have, that other mid-table teams can also climb higher. And that's why it makes me wonder if Krivbas can hold on to that. They definitely are not going to push on, because we discussed that team before and I said that they hit the ceiling, manager-wise at least. And even if we change manager, like you said, they're the only team who hadn't done that. But even if they had, it would be just a merry-go-round. Like Cherkasy, they hired Dulub. And Dulub, I mean, you can label him has-been, but he produced the result with such team. newly promoted, and he was better than Kovbak, obviously, their younger manager, who everybody praised. And now we see the situation that not many coaches would like to go to Ukraine to coach, unless you are Mario Stanic or Mario Pušić. But the other guys are just not there. And Kribas, they are newcomers for European football. So they're not really on the map yet. So I guess this is the foundation that they will need to put on, you know, for the legacy. And I don't think they will. So there are two European spots up for grabs, them and the team that represented Dnipro City.
I know, Andrew, you've been praising them a lot this year for their recruitment. Are there any rumours in the pipeline about players coming or going there? Or is it one where we're going to be watching their space over the summer?
Well, I think the fact that they have made it to the Europa League might give them a bit of added potential for signings this summer. We'll see. It's worth mentioning that Kribas sort of had a quite a strong finish to the season as well. There's been rumours around that apparently Metalist 925 were trying to motivate Kribas to beat Minai on the final day. And in the end, what actually happened was that Kribas rejected it and they won against Minai anyway. So, you know, they're trying to be clean cut, at least publicly, in a way. But I think from a European perspective, they're officially in the third qualifying round of the Europa League, which means that they're not guaranteed European group stage, league stage football next season. But I think there's a high chance that they might get there. So if they lose in their third qualifying round, they'll go down into the playoffs for the Conference League. And then, you know, there's potential that they might be able to get through there. Just on the basis that Yuri Vernadorp has got experience in that competition or in those competitions and has been, you know, for a number of seasons with Zorya and with Sheriff. And I feel that right now, Kribas is a lot more stable of a team than his Zorya sides ever were. Yes, there's a chance that they might sell a few of their players. So already we've been hearing, we're going to touch on it in a bit more detail in a minute, but Polisia have signed Danilo Bezkorovaini, the centre-back, for around 600k euros. And he's going to be moving at some stage imminently. I heard Viktor Vatsko says that he expects Dibango to leave as well for, you know, probably a million plus, maybe. And already they're actively looking for replacement / strengthening. And as Ray says, that there's probably no chance of Kribas ever getting higher than their current stage or even competing further. You know, there are people that are saying that they will try and at least cement this to make it a bit more consistent. Albeit next season, you know, you're going to be getting the likes of Polisia, Karpate, LNZ maybe, who will be trying to fight for that third spot with, I expect, probably big summers. So it's going to be very interesting. And as well, if Kribas do make it to the Conference League or the Europa League sort of final tournaments, how are they going to cope playing in Europe and in the league? Most of the time, it's a struggle for anyone, you know, that isn't Shakhtar or, you know, Dynamo in seasons gone by. So I think we'll have to wait and see. By far, like you said, Adam, Kribas were the most consistent team of the season. I think that realistically, we can name Yuri Vernadorp as manager of the season. I think it's hard not to give him that award in the UPL anyway. Ray might disagree, but listen, did anyone expect Kribas to finish in the top three? I don't think so. Maybe even the top five, no one expected that for realistically. And here we are. So in my opinion, they deserve it for now. Let's see how it goes continually next season. But yes, it's going to be a lot tougher.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would agree with you, Andrew, on this one, because he deserves that award. And for now, when I was listening to you, I realized that we're talking about Luchescu syndrome here. Vernadorp came back to Ukraine and he had to prove himself. And he did exactly what he had done a lot previously with Zorya. He clinched that bronze or fourth spot or whatever you need to go to Europe. He did that. He had done that. If he hadn't done anything better than that in Ukraine, he'd done it with Sheriff in Champions League, which was his highest point in his managerial career. And that's why I think that it's the Lucescu effect when he's only good for one season and then there's a decline. Only if we talk about the manager. On the other hand, I realize that it's probably now we're setting the foundation for the teams that are going to represent the elite of Ukrainian football for the next 5 years. We have Polisse, we have Dynamo Shakhtar, we have Ruch, we have Kribas, top five. And it's as we when we look at this top five, I don't see anyone who can rock that boat. That can be Karpaty. Karpaty could replace Kribas in theory. Maybe LNZ, but that's it. The rest of the teams have their own struggle that is typical for Ukrainian football, and we are just wondering what the hell are they doing in the table anyway?
Yes. Speaking of teams with struggles ahead, the club that represents the great city of Dnipro, well, it looks like they're all relocating to Zhytomyr this summer, one way or another. Already started with the under-19 manager, Imadashu, taking over, being announced this week. Well, what other moves are in the pipeline there, Andrew? But you are our Zhytomyr expert, I have to say. Were you disappointed that they didn't take bronze, as I think you predicted at the start of the season?
Yes, I did predict it. Sadly, they didn't do it. I think some things that we also predicted that maybe Kalatvintsev wouldn't be the guy that did it. On the contrasting side, as we just mentioned, Dnipro won. There's this team that I think that no one wanted them to qualify for the European places because it's essentially just a waste. It's just a waste of them playing there, especially with all the rumors that are going on across Ukrainian media right now about what's going on with the future. Obviously, their alleged ghost benefactor has been in court slash in prison for a number of months. And as a result of that, there's been rumors of salaries not being paid to players and that kind of thing. I even know from the source that told me that ex-players, ones that are currently on loan and one that now plays for Karpaty, they've not been paid for like last season. And then over the past few weeks, Yuri Maksimov has gave the ultimatum that he's going to leave if they lose to Kribas. They end up beating Kribas, of course. So he stayed. And then apparently his contract, which would have run out this season had they not made Europe. However, as a result of them making Europe, it automatically has a clause that renews for another season. So, will he actually be staying, despite the fact that there is everything leading to the fact, and even people telling me that he is leaving this summer? So, that's kind of unknown for the time being. And then he gave an interview, which the commercial director of Dnipro one sort of disputed afterwards, saying, I've got no idea where he got these figures from. But Maksimov was saying that 70% of the team have already signed contracts with other clubs. They're basically playing in the shirts of the other clubs under their Dnipro shirts. But still, paradoxically, after all of this, they ended up beating Chernomorets on the final day and sealing that fourth spot, which realistically, it's sort of difficult to actually comprehend what's going on there and why that's all happened. But as far as I'm aware, a load of players are exiting. You just mentioned the under-19s manager has gone on to Polisa, who we're going to talk about very shortly in a bit more detail. He's become the new manager of Polisa in a slight shock because everyone thought he was going to become Polisa 2 manager or something like that. But no, he's the main guy there now. As well as that, following him from the Dnipro seniors, Oleksiy Huculyak, who's been rumoured to be going to Polisa for ages now. Apparently, he's gone there for only 600K. When there's been rumors that he's going to be costing 2 million plus. Well, Butkevich said they were 600K and he's gone there. Ruslan Babenko, he also is a free agent this summer. He's also left for Polisia. On top of that, there's rumors that Svatok, Sarapi, Rubczynski, Picholionok, plenty of others are all going to depart this campaign, which is basically the spine slash all the good players in the squad. And then what? What's going to happen with the future of Dnipro 1? Are they just going to fall apart or crumble? Apparently not. As far as I'm aware, it's just going to be basically youth and their own academy playing for the foreseeable until probably, I don't know, the alleged benefactor returns or gets completely fed up. So realistically, Dnipro 1 is very much the what is the point of them stage. I mean, that has been the case for a long time because they don't have any fans, organic ones anyway. Genuinely, they're actually being more of a nuisance to Ukrainian football in Europe and our coefficients and everything like that than anything else. So that's really frustrating.
And of course, the team that sadly missed out was Ruk, with one of the most promising academies across Ukraine. I saw an interesting article or video, I can't remember now, by Dmytro of Reznok back on the scene, talking about the Ruk Academy. And you know, we've known for a few years what great work they've been doing in youth. And those youths have come through to the first team and they had a strong first half of the season. You know, they definitely, as has been mentioned, drawn a lot of matches and a number of poor performances in the second half of the season. But with how young their players are in general, was it to be expected? And maybe, Ray, would you expect Ruk to push on from here as these players get a bit more experience? Or are you expecting the top ones to be cherry-picked by bigger teams this summer?
I hope they move to Europe, some of them. There are rumours about some teams interested. Benfica, I think. I don't think there is such thing. There is such concept as experience in the league. Like they gain more experience. It's there are multiple factors, but you can win a league with 19-year-olds. You can win, you can promote, you can get to Europe. You can win the cup with kindergarten kids. You know, and that's why I don't think there's a concept of experience. I think it's about the manager who led them throughout the academy. So he's basically on the same level with them. So he hasn't seen those heights when you actually achieve something in the top flight of Ukrainian football, even though we all know that top flight is actually Druga and Persha Liga, but in UPL. I really hope them to push on, but they could have managed to achieve something this season, maybe even previous season, if they were not experienced, but if they had this X factor, whatever the X factor that Renedup didn't have either. You know, we discussed that before. It's maybe psychology, maybe morale, because those rookies, they're huge. They're athletes, all right? We don't have to argue about them not being able to play football. Kvasnitsa is fresh off the boat, Chelsea winger right now. You know, there's something missing. I'm not sure what, but definitely not experience. Just to mention the teams that are controversial in this UPL, like Zorya, team from Dnipro City, and the problem is that media cover them a lot. Like Ukrainian football media cover those teams, and then we're wondering why it's in nonsense that they're playing, because people are talking about them. Maybe if you stop talking, you focus on teams that actually matter. Even Vorskla has fans, Vorskla has traditions, and nobody, and they barely talk about it. They talk about Zorya because, well, whatever, and a Dnipro City team because they have decent players and the money and the rumors. It's just not worth the time. And I just want the journalists to realize that. It's the coverage issue.
Well, speaking of probably teams that Ray doesn't like giving too much coverage, Polisia. Yeah, we've obviously touched on them already earlier in this episode, but we can't not fully go in depth there. Yes, Shishchenko came in, replaced Kalitvintsev, led Polisia to Europe for the very first time. Second qualifying round in the Europa League, by the way. So it's going to be tough, especially with the coefficient points that they're going to have and, you know, against the potential teams that they might be facing. However, it's a good achievement nonetheless. Despite this, Shishchenko has been replaced as head coach of Polisia by Imad Ashour, as Adam already mentioned. He's currently a bit of an unknown quantity in the sense of a first team coach, because he's only been with youth teams. He's never coached a senior side before. However, he is highly rated, and he does come from PAS, the reputable university for scouting and coaching in Ukraine, which has already shown that there are links between Polisia, of course, Dnipro 1, where the founder of PAS, Khliplatov, used to work, and also Karpaty, where another ex sort of PAS person or current PAS person, Khlib Kornienko, works as a chief scout. So it looks like there's a sort of a triangle appearing on the Ukrainian footballing map, which might connect these three teams a bit closer together over the next few seasons. We'll see how deeply that all continues. But as I mentioned, Polisia have already signed two players from Dnipro 1. On top of that, they've got Danil Beskorovaini from Krivbas. And as well as that, there's lots of rumours per se that a number of the Dnipro 1 academy players, or youth players at least, will be making their way to Polisia Academy, or Polisia 2, which is going to be a brand new Druhaliha side. So that's going to be interesting to see, as well as the fact that obviously Polisia has very close ties with Zviachel, who, as we'll touch on later, might be making it into Persha, depending on how things work out. But I think ultimately, one thing that is certain is that Butkevich is going to be throwing funds at his team this summer. I think we can expect some more players being signed, that's for sure. And as well as that, a lot of exits. So already, I think Tato Takea were mentioning the likes of Denis Boyko will leave, Artem Shabanov is on his way, Kritsuk, Endukve, who only just arrived recently. It seems like there is going to be a clear out of, I guess, the players that were brought in just to provide, you know, that continuity from Persha into UPL, add a bit of experience into the team. Now they're going to upgrade the quality of those players, because realistically, come on, Beskorovaini probably is an upgrade on Shabanov, much younger, you know, ball playing centre back. Then you've got Babenko, who's going to be coming in for Khritsuk. And on top of that, Hutsulyak, who I guess is going to be slotting straight in at right wing, or even as you know, up as one of the forwards next season. And that's just the three that they've signed the day after the season ended. So it's going to be a long summer, and I'm sure that there's going to be plenty of other players. And also, they've not renewed the loans of Ivan Petiak, who did not hit the ground running at all since he arriving at the end of the winter. On top of that, you've got Mikita Kravchenko, who's returned to Dynamo after his loan, and as well as that, Fortune, who I think arrived from Switzerland or somewhere. He's completely been, he can go back there in terms of he's not been very effective either. So I think my prediction maybe was a season early. I'll stick my neck out right now. I think Polisia will be in the top three. I think Polisia will be in the top three in 24-25.
Oh, there we go.
You just said it yourself, Andrew, that the owner is going to be throwing money away, not investing, not converting into the, you know, players or whatever, the quality or the results, throwing money away. That's the strategy. And also, I just want to feel sorry about Vasil Kravets, who is leaving Polisia. The guy has been playing in Europe, in Spain for a while. He decided to go back to Ukraine, to, I think, the team from Dnipro City, then to Polisia. Now he's apparently coming back to Karpaty. Was it all worth it? That is my question. And in general, as you said about the owner, yes, the way that we shouldn't be covering those teams, not us, but the media that we, follow in Ukraine, they talk about the teams that are owned by the presidents. They are playing for presidents. And unfortunately, this is the majority of the teams in the whole Ukrainian football. And that's what is going to change. But it's not going to change unless you stop talking about them. You know what I mean? So that was my point. And Ruch probably maybe should stop playing for Kozlowski that much next season. We will see.
Now, when you look in the middle of the table, it's some of the fallen giants of recent years seem to have found a place there. Zorya, Borska, and the like. We know Zorya have had financial troubles for many a year, and Kolos made a very interesting managerial decision this spring. Vorskla Alexandria, any light at the end of this season's tunnel for them? Any glimmers of hope to see them bounce back in the 24-25 season?
Well, both of them are coached by former players, and we know how it goes these days in the league. If you don't want to spend too much money, you just sign a former player. But one of them is Ruslan Rutan, and I think Andrew can fill us in on Ruslan Rutan more because from what I've seen, I mean, I support this guy, but he's been struggling a lot. He's been suffering, to be precise, in the league with his football. Some people say it's just meaningless hackneyed passing around on your own half for possession. But in this case, we can see that it doesn't really work. The transfers are being obnoxious. The overall policy has been ridiculous. And touching on Vorskla, they have Serhii Dolhanski, who is not really the most charismatic person in the world. And they have reached the cup final. They performed well, but for the next season, they are just going to be, going with the flow. It's a good image to see in Poltava, like the fans showing up, the player. They have decent players, but yeah, it's a bit of a stagnation for them. So I think they're gonna stay where they are, and I wouldn't put my bets on them.
Sean Lamorettes, Andrew.
Kriharchuk, the talk's been all about him most probably leaving this summer. Where he ends up going is another question. Rumours that he might go to LNZ, I think, has been the most prevalent, replacing Dulub, who maybe LNZ want a bit more of a exciting manager. And I guess Kriharchuk can do wonders, and he's a very good manager, but I guess the instability of Sean Lamorettes just at the moment with, I guess, financial, maybe not insecurities, but just unsure what the future is going to bring, especially with Odessa being heavily attacked all the time, is another question. So if he ended up somewhere like LNZ, I wouldn't be surprised, really.
Yeah, when looking at the relegation battle, in previous episodes, we expected some of these mid-table teams to be involved, but little by little, they pulled themselves away. And going into the final day, it was down to three of the four. Metalist 1925 had struggled a lot, especially post-winter break. And it was pretty much set in stone that they would be providing us with potentially a Kharkiv derby in the Hersha League next year, which will be an interesting watch. Now, as I mentioned at the start of this episode, relegation has been set for some. And as our good friend Vladimir Zverev says, no matter what happens at the end of the season, Minai do not go down. Well, they have finished in the end of the in the relegation spot. They are expected to go down, but being Ukrainian football, it ain't over till the fat lady sings. And we've still got June AGMs and things like that to go through before it is completely set in stone. But it looks like for them now, despite, you have to say, gents, they put in a good battle over the last couple of months, certainly turned the corner post winter break. Well, just didn't have enough games to climb out of it. And really, a bit like a Rook earlier, gave it away on the final day in particular, right? Whereas another one finishing up in the playoff spots. Right, would you say expected? Would you accept that? Happy for Oblon's sake, they weren't in the bottom two.
They had the chances, right? They had the chances to finish there, but it's a clear evidence of how the relegation zone has been run. Like, where is they assigned to Shandruk from Academy, and he's been he's a good actor, you know. He's an image. He is he has style of his own, and if you watch him, like, camera understands that, you know, the broadcasters understand that what I'm talking about, and they show him a lot, like the way he behaves on the touchline. And I think we missed him on Football is Serious previously. I mean, he would be a great replacement for Wirt. And maybe we would still be watching Football is Serious if he was around, you know? And that proved, that's worked. And they produced good results. They beat Oblon 3-0, and they beat others. Head-to-head matches, all or nothing. Very cinematic. And now they're in the playoffs. They're going to beat Epicenter, and they're going to stay. They deserve it. Oblon, on the other hand, is a completely different thing. Oblon is just good at bullying referees. Fighting till the end, producing NHL on grass without the sticks and skates. So they really deserve to go down, especially when they face Liberec, because Liberec is an Obolon from 2010s, when we were believed in achievements that are right here in front of us in UPL. Obolon newly promoted with new stadium, new fans, everything, new players. And that's what Liberec is looking at, and they have this chance, and I don't want them to slip it away, you know. And Obolon really needs some thinking to do. They really need to clean their staff in first place. I don't think it's gonna happen, but I would love to see them in Premier League. Honestly, it would be a refreshment. And if they stay in UPL, what I really bet on is that they would only play youth. Because this season, if they stay in UPL for the next season, it's going to be given for them like a present, like a Christmas gift. And there's no other way to use it but to play youth only in all matches. You could lose 0-10, but you let it go. Okay, you actually show us that what I said before, the youth can play football. And why not doing it now, since you just got it for free? Andrew, you mentioned the Dnipro City team playing youth. Sounds good, but there will be a huge contrast. But with Obolon, I don't think it's going to be even a huge contrast, because they're still going to end up in relegation zone, even if they play youth. So you don't lose anything.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think the playoffs will be interesting. But like Ray says, I think Veres will sweep up against Epicenter and stay up, and deservedly so. Shandruk seems to have brought in sort of a nice mentality there. They play some all right football. And as well as that, Rivne actually has a fan base kind of thing going on there. They sell out the stadium all the time. It looks like to be one of the most, you know, interesting parts of the city in terms of stuff to do. Going down to the Avanhard, where I visited for the cup final. Still not finished, by the way, but it's obviously a good place to, you know, see some football. And yeah, I think that seems to be pretty set in stone. I'd be shocked if they didn't get past Epicenter, because Epicenter ended up finishing fourth, and they were closer to the likes of Prekarpatia, Kurivka, Neva and all that lot below them than they were to the top three. So there's a real gulfing class between Veres, for example, and Epicenter. Liberec, on the other hand, yes, I agree with everything Ray said there. They're a progressive club. I think they want to go up into the UPL and have got ambitions there. I'm not sure about their squad being up to it, though. So there might have to be some wholesale changes if they do get past Obolon. But one thing I think is for sure is that we probably won't be seeing many goals in that two-legged playoff final. And it might be some quite depressing football to watch. But hopefully we get an interesting result towards the end of it. But I just want to touch on, before we end up wrapping up this sort of league team overview, Metalist 925. Well, Ray was talking a bit about Skripnik getting found out in previous episodes. And yeah, after coming in the winter, after the Metalist 925 president saying that listen, we'll be all right. We'll go to church and all that, and we'll stay up. That didn't happen. So now it's sort of back to the drawing board. And I think that realistically, if they have a half decent budget in the Persha, they'll probably be up there in the promotion spots. However, of course, we know that there will be other competing with them, to say the least. Maybe not the maybe Minai, but maybe also Bukovina, who are down there as well.
I've got to come back on you though on one thing. I prefer to see Epicenter go, I've got to say. Yeah, I know, shock horror. Ray, you mentioned Avalon needing to clean house. I feel Verez, from a club that it was, could also do with some deep cleaning that a few years in the Persia might have given time to before they can come back on the right footing. You feel, as Andrew, you mentioned, a bit further up the table, the Dnipro minus one, what's the point? Perez has built this brand spanking new stadium, or still in the process of it. You have to have, at the moment with Perez, what's the point? And they need to figure out who they actually are and what they want to achieve, because something just doesn't feel right with that club. And Epicenter might bring a fresh dynamic to the UPL next year, almost in a way of a LNZ, shall we say. Anyway, that's my two pence. End of the season awards. Where shall we start? Transfer of the year. Ray.
Yeah, thank you. I have to say I had my own nominations. I offered a nomination of longest cliffhanger, which was Minai. But there are no other contenders. There are no other contenders. So it's like one-man job. I really don't know. I think maybe, Andrew, you can help me out on the transfer.
It's a weird, it's a tough one, because the two that I'd probably say are more half season wonders rather than so together there'll be one transfer of the season. For the first half, I'd give it to Benny Makuana, definitely by far the best player in the first half of the campaign, and in the second, I did like the look of Kevin. Having seen him in person, he's very, very quick, like compared to all the other players around him. And I think that from next season, he'll be, you know, a very key player for Shakhtar. So we'll say those two.
From my side, I am going to put the boot on the other foot and actually say some of the best transfers this year were clubs managing to remove the junk from their roster. From where I am here in Luxembourg, Dinamo managing to find somebody to take the nut of Gerson Rodriguez for even just a few months. All credit to them. I mean, he didn't manage to last out alone and got kicked back pretty quickly, but managing to find somebody that's still willing to give that guy a chance, as well as shipping out all the other trash that Luchescu brought in those random signings. For me, that has been the most impressive bit of business over the last 12 months.
I have to say Vlad Vakula for me now. That has been a second half of the season transfer, definitely.
No police stories coming out in the next week, are there?
Hope not.
In all seriousness, it's good to see him have a good 6 months there, and let's see what next season brings for him if he decides to stay. Player of the season.
I mean, realistically, it's tough to go beyond this player. My opinion, Sudakov scored the winner in the Clasico gold medal match, whatever. Been pretty consistent all season. If he has a big Euros, going to confirm that big money move away. Yeah. Sudakov.
For me, I would go with the debuts of the season, or maybe the hope of the season is Lea Kvasnitsa, because he destroyed the backbones of defenders throughout the whole season. And the second one would be Horkar Snopir from Obol, and he managed to score 6 goals in a shitty team, and he's been playing for Oblast two years ago. So it's a good prospect and someone to keep an eye on.
Andrew, you get my vote there with Sudakov for Meads. A player that, and it will move nicely into the next segment, for me, no longer belongs in the EPL and needs to move on. And kind of leads me into the next sort of question of what European league is a good role model for the UPL to develop into as we move further into this new generation with more players popping up across Europe. Ray, I'll bring you in first on that one.
Since I've started researching that matter in winter of this season, second half of the season, after they appointed Shevchenko and presented the UPL TV concept, which is a very huge gamble for the whole world to be enjoying UPL, you know, after they knew literally nothing about the league throughout the whole 10 years of the past. I would go with Poland, because even though Andrew said that we play better football, I don't agree with that. And they have the model where the stadiums are packed, the coverage is decent, people like it, people go there, people invest their time in Ekstraklasa. Even though the players are shit, but they are closer to Europe and it's easier to move them to Europe. And that's what's happening now with us. We've been talking Croatian scenario. Now I think we're ready to move on to Polish scenario. Because I would be fine with us playing even worse as we play. Even, I mean, I stand corrected. I would be fine if we start playing football, not just turning it into other types of sports, you know? Most of the time, we just rely on physique and how well we can, you know, grill each other on the pitch. How loud are the coaches? How profound and proficient are you in swearing? And all that kind, you know, we heard plenty of that without the fans on these stands. So I would be happy with that only. And I would be happy if the football starts to be covered on Polish level, at least. Right now we have it, as I mentioned before, UPL TV has Maxim Fashuk, who is the coach of the regional team in Stryj. And it's beautiful because he came from YouTube to UPL TV and he's a former football star. It's a great example. I hope they stay that way. But remember where UPL TV is based, the city of Lviv, maybe even the hotel of Golovsky. Yeah, I would go so far as saying that, but yeah, there are plenty to think about.
Fisher and Druha, seasons have wrapped up now, more or less. We've got some interesting playoffs to look forward to. The one between Persia and UPL has already been discussed, and we'll see if Epicenter and Livy Barre can join Carpathian on the return to the UPL. Congratulations to both teams. Inglets caused a bit of a surprise on the final day. One of those classic Ukrainian moments with the winner being scored in the 93rd minute. And Andrew, just to expand on something you mentioned earlier, three more pass recruits there, leading Ingelets to the championship and on a return. From a Carpathian side, have questions been asked about the fall away from what seemed like a guaranteed title for the Lviv Giants?
I'm not sure. I think the main goal realistically was just to get promotion. And officially, it's not promotion back into the UPL. It's just promotion to the UPL. Because this Carpathia was obviously only founded in 2020 or 2021. Officially. So I think one thing that is going to be interesting to see this summer is, as we mentioned, are Carpathia going to come into the UPL and start competing for those European spots straight away? Because there's been lots and lots of rumours that Dnipro 1 players might be joining Karapaty straight away in terms of Sarapi, Svatok, Rubchinski. There's obviously that pass link that I mentioned there between Dnipro 1, Karapaty, Polisa, Inhulets even, as we've just mentioned, those pass graduates. It's all rather interesting, to say the least. Karpaty are very ambitious, though. They've got a good fan base, which I think will come out in even bigger droves from next season, because they're going to be back in the UPL. Everyone loves, a bit of glory around there to turn up to games. And, yeah, they're doing some good stuff marketing-wise as well. So the question is, I guess, how will Karpaty look? Because there's already been rumours in Ukrainian media that Andriy Rusol, the Dnipro 1 sporting director / part owner / whatever, he will be moving to Karpaty to be taking, you know, a role there. And also Oleksandr Markov, who was the sporting director at Oleksandria, then he got sidelined after the Kaluzhny debacle. He's apparently going to be moving to Karpaty as well as the new sporting director, which I guess leaves the future potentially of Miron Markevich under question. I'm not sure, because those guys might want to bring in their own people. Who knows? And then maybe there'll be a bit of an overhaul. I mean, Karpaty certainly, from a squad perspective, need wholesale changes. They've got some good players for Persha, but realistically, they need a lot of improvement to be challenging anywhere near the top 6, 7, 8 in the UPL. So time will tell. I think Inhulets will be in and around the relegation zone next season, if we're going to be all honestly. But apparently, their stadium will be done for the UPL, their new one, the one that we visited 3 years ago. So fingers crossed that will be completed, and the old away day cage at their current stadium is no more.
Oh, it'll be great to see UPL football in the village. Elsewhere in Persia, interesting for me, as I mentioned earlier on this season, with the regional split in the Persia, which didn't happen in the Drupa for surprising reasons, created the imbalance that I've seen. Three teams from the Eastern Group B at the start of the year finish in the bottom three places and be automatically relegated to the Drua. Kremlin from Kremenchuk, Chernihiv, and Phoenix Sport from Kryvyi Rih. Just down the road from Kremenchuk, bad year for the region's football there. They've all dropped down to the Drua next season. In the playoffs, Metal Zaporizhzhia, who were top of the bottom half at the start, have really fallen away and didn't turn up for some matches, and all sorts of trouble going on there with Metal falling into the playoff zone. They'll face Uksa. And Kustu, I've been following this season, slipped up dramatically on the final day. Another classic moment where they lose 7-1 at home to Dinas, and Dinas jumps above them to avoid the playoffs and must have dropped down. Thinking about it, of course, the links between Manai and Husk might come into question if they're in the same league next season. So that will be an interesting sideline to watch. Hus will replace Spichau, who, as Andrew mentioned earlier, got the strong links with Lycia. Now, down in the Druha, Druzhba Mirivka have been promoted in their first season of professional football. Congratulations to them. Good friend Phil Howden has been following them a lot this season and was over in Stry in Lviv of last this very weekend, recording and publishing the events going on there, and a 1-0 win for the visitors secured them the title on the final day, and straight back to, well, not back-to-back promotions, but jumping up two levels in the 2 years, and we'll be in the Persia this year. It'll be very interesting to see if they follow Kudryavtseva's progression and move up into the upper echelons of Persia next year. Rumours are coming out. Andrew, I don't know if they've been confirmed yet. Maybe you could clarify a bit deeper on this, that the Persia's to be cut down to 18 teams next year, which may hinder the regionalisation of the Persia coming to an end, which would be a good thing, I think, for the division.
Well, essentially, what we're seeing is nothing's been confirmed yet. But, like you mentioned, Adam, three teams are getting relegated from the Persha, so there's going to be less teams next campaign. On top of that, a load of new teams are going to be popping up in Druha, including, I think Ray mentioned in the last episode that we recorded, a number of clubs from the UPL. They're two teams, like their reserve teams, essentially. The most notable one, Polisia 2, who are going to be essentially, you know, a youth side of theirs. And hence why it seems like if Jackal do go up, it will make a bit of a logical vertical hierarchy of having linked teams in every division for them. So that would actually end up being quite nice for them, that is. Whether it's ethical or against sporting principle is another question entirely. But yeah, I think there's a number of other amateur sides. Me and Ray were talking about this the other day. I think we saw something. I think there's a Ternopil side that wants to be coming up. Also,
Kulikiv Bilka. And it's funny because they have Upper Bilka and Lower Bilka, so I get confused between those. But they're a former amateur side from Rayon Football, so that's pretty cool.
And then there's Rivera 1907, who are essentially Prikarpatia's academy / youth team, but it seems to be slightly separate. They're expected to be starting in the Druha as well. So exciting times, but as we always know, there's no point even discussing this now. We'll talk to you the week before the season starts when we actually find out who's actually been confirmed, who's been given the attestat, the certificate for actually being in the league, because plenty of things can change. Because, for example, the reason that Metalurg Zaporizhia have been down in the lower parts of the Persha this season is mainly because they're a city-financed club. And obviously, due to the war and all that kind of stuff, that funding has been reduced substantially and the results have been seen on the pitch. However, I think they are going to be returning to playing in Slavutic Arena, which is also an interesting decision per se. But I mean, if you're playing in Dnipro Arena, if you're playing in Kryvyi Rih elsewhere during this war, then I guess the playing there will make sense. It's just going to be more guaranteed delays and lengthy matches. So that's something that I think we'll bring into a bit more deeper discussion once we get into preparation for next season.
Here we are at the end of the main, wrapping up the domestic season, and in a blink of an eye, preparation for Eurochamps commences as we move into the first days of June. The Euro squad list has been released already. Andrew, any names to be that surprised you there? Any causing concern?
Well, I think we'll deep dive into actually the final squad in our Euro preview episode, which will be coming out in a few weeks' time. However, just on the face of it, this is the warm-up squad, per se, for the Euros that Serhii Rebrov has announced. 26 players have been called up, which is, funnily enough, the final number that UEFA will call upon. And he's also called upon six reserves. But those six reserves, I don't think, are actually going to be involved in the training beforehand anyway. So the squad that he has announced, there are no surprises in it. No, none. Sedhisa Chuk's involved in it, which I think a lot of people have been disappointed that he's been called up because he's not been playing very well for Westerlo and all that kind of thing. And, you know, he's not been that great in the past. However, Dubrov's been quite loyal to the team that have made it to the final tournament. And I think on paper, it's probably Ukraine's best squad that you could possibly call upon. Maybe Daniil Sakan will feel a bit hard done by that he's not one of the three centre-forwards that are involved. But as I said, Dubrov has mentioned in the past, Vanat is just a bit more versatile as a forward. You know, if needed, he can play on the wing. He's a bit quicker. He's, you know, a bit more mobile in that respect, in the same way as Yaremchuk is, whereas Artem Dovbik's a bit more one-dimensional in terms of hold-up play, more of an in-the-box centre-forward. So I think there's balance. There's two players in every single position, in some cases three. And then I guess the only weak point or out-and-out position that doesn't have a direct replacement is left wing for Mihailo Mudryk, but it's something we've been speaking about for the best part of 2 years now. And realistically, Alexander Zubkov will probably be that backup left-sided winger when we get there. Yarmolenko's included, so Stepanenko, let's see what their fitness is saying. I wouldn't be surprised if Stepanenko features from the start over Brashko, just on the basis that regardless of his age and injuries, he is still extremely pivotal. Yarmolenko, I think, will probably be taking more of a backseat this tournament, though. But hopefully, before we even get there, by the time we're recording this next, Yarmolenko will have somehow either equaled or emulated Andriy Shevchenko's goal scoring record by getting a few in the friendlies against Germany, Poland, and Moldova. So a good warm-up for Zbirna. I think the goals have already been outlined by Andriy Shevchenko, the UEF president, that the main aim is to get out of the group. And then anything else will be a bonus because, as we've spoken about in the past, depending on where Ukraine finish in the group, it depends how easier or more favourable their run will be to make the quarters, semis, final, etc. And one thing I do want to mention just before we move on from this little section about the Ukraine senior team is the form that our players are going into this tournament in. Most notably, Artem Dovbik won the Pichichi Trophy in Spain, La Liga, 24 goals, 8 assists. The top scorer cost 7 million. I would say he's fully deserved it, of course. I think he's the first Ukrainian player to score 24 since Andriy Shevchenko back in the early 2000s. And now he was the first non-Real Madrid or Barcelona player to become top scorer, I think, in over a decade as well. So huge achievement. And of course, we know that Tsiankov's been playing really well with him of late. Scored twice in the final day of the season as well, got an assist. Just that chemistry between them, I think, is going to be really positive and helpful for Ukraine going into this summer. As well as that, Ruslan Malinovsky returned from injury for his first start for Genoa in their final day of the season, scored, which is also positive. Who knows if he's going to be involved from the start for Ukraine, because remember, he did start in that playoff final match against Iceland. And as well as that, I think a notable shout out to Viktor Kovalenko, whose Empoli side survived Serie A on the very last day of the season, thanks to a 93rd minute winner from Mbaye Niang. So he's staying in Serie A for at least another campaign.
Is he going to Germany, though?
No, he's not. I don't think he will be under any consideration for that. Just an interesting little nugget of information there.
Elsewhere in the under-17s tournament that's taking place at the moment. Been a disappointing couple of weeks in Cyprus there. At least they were able to finish off on a on a high note with a victory against the host nation. But yeah, questions need to be asked there, and hopefully the seniors won't follow in a similar suit. Before we go to today, though, a little bit of controversy around the Olympic selection, though, isn't there? Rook causing mischief already by withdrawing their players. Their injury list is certainly going to be keeping physicians and the whatnot busy over this summer. It seems like everybody's picked up something after the final match of the season, and nobody will be able to go to France this summer, which is a shame. Ondarenko and Krstic missing from the list as well. That was a surprise, wasn't it, Andrew?
Firstly, before we touch on Krstic and Bondarenko and the Rook stuff, I think it's worth mentioning that this squad that Ruslan Rotaň has unveiled is actually a preliminary warm-up squad that are going to be playing a tournament in France, Toulon, I think, against a number of other under-23 teams that are preparing for the Olympics. And as a result of that, there have been a number of notable omissions. Obviously, Krstic and Bondarenko, which some people expected to be included. However, as they're both classified as one of the over-23s, because a reminder that anyone born before January 2001 counts as over-23, and both of them are counting as that, it sort of hints at the fact that maybe Ruslan Rotaň will be picking some players from Serhii Rebrov's team come the end of the Euros, then he may be able to transfer some of those players into his own Olympic team or final Olympic team anyway. And as a result of that, there's no point in Bondarenko and Krstic going to a warm-up tournament if they're not going to be included in the final squad. And then we go on to this Rook stuff. So there's been a bit of clarification since these initial rumours came out that Rook have released an official statement. They said that, yes, these players won't be going to this warm-up tournament, but there is going to be another camp that's going to be starting at the start of July. And all of their players that are injured, if they have recovered by then, will be available for selection. And they're not stopping any of them from going to the actual Olympic Games because they understand the prestige of it all and all that kind of stuff. It's just, I think, solely based on this pre-tournament warm-up stuff, which I guess makes a bit of sense. It's just going to mean that Ruslan Rotaň's, obviously the preparation will not be as extensive as he'd hoped, but realistically they're all going to be friendlies, there'll probably be lots of rotation and all that kind of stuff. So is it really going to show anything or help him with anything? Probably not, especially if he takes a few people from the seniors who won't be in the training camp even before the Olympic Games anyway. So it'll be interesting to see. Let's just wait, I guess, a month to truly finalise what's going on there. But it's good to know that Rook aren't disrespecting the Olympic Games as such. And I think, or I hope, that actually the majority of these six players that have been called up that aren't going to this Toulon tournament will actually be available in 4 weeks' time. Also, before we end up going, be sure that we will be having a Euro preview episode where we'll be talking exclusively about Zbirna. We'll be recapping the friendlies, what have we learned from them, who's likely to start in the first game and all that kind of stuff just before the tournament starts. So 2 weeks, you'll have a new episode that's going to be focusing solely on Ukraine and the Euros.
What a lovely way to finish tonight's show. And fingers crossed for that. We will be with you again one more time before the big summer extravaganza in Germany. And until that time, everyone at home, take care, stay safe, and goodbye for now. Bye-bye.